Case number 20-1038, Todd Corser versus Keith Allard et al. Argument not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mr. DiPerno, you may proceed for the appellant.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors, if it may please the court. This case is about whether certain government employees are entitled to immunity for conduct of theirs between January 2015 and September of 2015. So the question really is, what can the government do to citizens and still be entitled to immunity? And how do we distinguish between the proper role of government and what the defendants did in this case? So what is the limit of that government immunity? These defendants, Keith Allard, Benjamin Graham, and Joshua Klein, were employees of the House of Representatives and were assigned to work in the office of Todd Corser, who was a House member for the Michigan House of Representatives. Their job was to serve in that office, to take phone calls, respond to constituents, draft bills, answer the telephones. And they did virtually none of that. What they did was access Todd Corser's personal emails, his text messages, his voicemail. They didn't have right to do that, but they found his password and accessed those sources of data. They followed him around outside of the House of Representatives. They even traveled to different counties. They took pictures of him. They planted recording devices. We see from the evidence we had that they had at least 600 recorded conversations, many of them that they weren't even part of, that were picked up just by them planting recording devices in various places. They forwarded that information that they obtained to other people, to Joe Gamrat, to David Orr, who weren't employees but were outside participants. They sent text messages using all of that data that they had obtained from private sources. They sent extortion text messages demanding that Todd Corser resign from office.
Mr. DiPerno, if I could interrupt you for just a second, I'm particularly curious about you, your statement that these three defendants in this case planted listening devices. Where would we go in the record to see evidence of that?
There's record in the exhibits that we had attached. All of the text messages between Keith Allard and Benjamin Graham and Joshua Klein, these young guys in that day and age, they virtually texted each other about everything that they were doing. It was like a live stream of what their thoughts were and what they were doing. So they have text message in there talking about recordings. They have text messages where they state they're listening to Todd Corser have sex. They state that they were listening through a bug, and they also have a play-by-play account of what they were doing. There's hundreds of pages of these text messages, which is a sort of a live account.
Okay, so the answer is text messages.
Yes, text messages.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Can you explain with regard to these various defendants, what the evidence is as to how they violated, how their behavior violated the evidence and violated the elements of the federal wiretapping statute? Just to focus on the federal cause of action here.
Sure. So,
I know we have RICO and some other things, but I'd particularly like to hear about the elements of whether the elements of the federal wiretapping statute was satisfied.
Sure. The defendants in this case, they didn't have, number one, they surreptitiously recorded conversations involving Todd Courser without his permission. And more importantly, Keith Allard was the supervisor to Benjamin Graham. And Keith Allard instructed Benjamin Graham to record conversations with Todd Courser. In some cases, Benjamin Graham was present during those conversations. And in some cases, we believe, as we alleged, they just planted recording devices. But this came at the direction of Keith Allard, and the testimony shows, his testimony at the preliminary examination case, show that he directed Ben Graham to do these things. And as an employee of the government, without a warrant, he directed an employee, Ben Graham, to do these recordings.
Was Graham recording conversations that Graham participated in?
In some cases, yes. And in other cases, we allege no. Some cases, they just planted recording devices around the office. They left computers on to pick up conversations when they weren't present. That's why the evidence shows that through emails and text messages, there were they discuss over 600 recordings that were not all of those that they were present in. But again, we don't have discovery on all of that stuff, but our allegations, take them under Rule 12b-6 in the light most favorable to the plaintiff, should survive a summary judgment motion on that, but for the immunity claims that they made. And the district court granted them immunity, both qualified immunity and governmental immunity, which we think was an error. We don't think they're entitled to immunity. In particular, for qualified immunity, the defendants are only entitled to immunity. They're not entitled to qualified immunity when their conduct violates clearly statutory or constitutional rights of which a reasonable person would have known. And they would have known. They're reasonable people. They work for the government. They're legislative aides. They would have known that the conduct they engaged in, following Todd Courser, surveilling him, taking pictures, not attending to the duties that they had, then engaging in a course of conduct with Joe Gamrat and David Hoare, where they supplied information so that these text messages could be sent out, these extortion text messages would be sent. They knew that that conduct violated statutes or constitutional rights. And therefore,
just to ask, because I'm curious about this, and I'm not saying this is dispositive, but this was part of the House business report too, was it not? This question of wiretapping?
Yes, yes.
And if I recall right, that doesn't the House business report say, for whatever it's worth, that whoever prepared that listened to these transcripts that you're talking about, and it shows that Graham participated in all the conversations?
Yeah, I mean, as you say, you're right, for what it's worth. We don't believe that. We don't believe they listened to every recording, and we don't believe that Ben Graham was part of every recording.
But do you have any evidence that he was not? I know you've made an allegation. I get that.
The only evidence that we have, not being able to conduct discovery, was that we see evidence that there was over 600 recordings, or about 600 recordings made, and that we read through the text messages that Allard and Graham sent to each other, and they're discussing things that they are hearing and what they refer to as bugs. And they're having this live stream conversation where they discuss these conversations. They're clearly not part of the conversations they are discussing. We'd like to depose them and ask them those questions, but clearly them sitting there texting each other while they're listening to conversations suggests to us that they're not part of those conversations. They're listening remotely.
Okay, I get it. Thank you.
Okay. Government employees are also, they're only entitled to governmental immunity if their actions were undertaken during a course of employment and that they were acting within the scope of their employment, undertaken in good faith and discretionary. And we think in this case, they're not entitled to governmental immunity because these actions were not in the course of their employment. They were done in with malice or in bad faith, and they were discretionary. And particularly, we got to look at Keith Allard and Ben Graham. Their employment only lasted until July of 2015, but they still engaged in this conduct after July 2015, and yet the district court still gave them immunity. As to Josh Klein, his employment ended in April of 2015, and he was still accessing Todd Courser's information, relaying it to other people, but he still was given immunity after for his actions after April of 2015. And we think though that's inappropriate and shouldn't have been given immunity at all, but certainly not for the time period after their employment terminated. And the last point I want to touch on here, because I'm winding down, is the issue of Josh Klein. The district court, we think, erred and abused his discretion when he lifted the default off of Josh Klein, a person who never pled anything, never made an appearance, never showed up to anything. He was defaulted, and the court set aside that default.
Thank you. Ms. Howard?
Good morning, and may it please the court. I'm Sarah Howard, and I represent Keith Allard and Benjamin Graham. Judge Quist got this decision entirely correct. Mr. Courser is trying the same tactics with the bench, both below and here, that he did with his constituents. He hopes that if he makes enough salacious allegations, he uses the word conspiracy enough, that you'll assume that there's something plausibly pled to his allegations. There simply is not. Now, my clients, Keith Allard and Ben Graham, seriously disagree with many of the allegations in the pleadings that we just heard Mr. DiPerno talk about, but that's not the standard here where we are. This is an unusual case in many, many respects. One thing that makes it unusual is how much almost discovery was had by the parties during the pleading stage because of Mr. Courser's criminal case, because of the sworn testimony by Mr. Courser before the House, because of the sworn testimony by my clients at the preliminary exam of Mr. Courser and Ms. Gamrat. And the pleadings are simply not plausible. They don't meet the Iqbal standard. Multiple claims, including the ones that the court asked about this morning, have limitation period issues.
Ms. Howard, if I could follow up on that.
Yes, Your Honor.
Perno is talking about these potential or alleged 600 surreptitious recordings through recording devices and all that kind of stuff. The Judge Quist, if I read this correctly, dismissed the wiretapping claim with respect to the so-called controlled burn conversation based upon the statute of limitations. Did these other supposed recordings occur after or before the controlled burn conversation? And assuming that they occurred, are they within or without the statute of limitations?
Your Honor, assuming that they occurred, which we must for these purposes, although I disagree with that, they would all have occurred prior to the running of the statute of limitations. They'd all be time barred. There's only a 2-year statute with federal claims on wiretapping. There has been no, as far as I can find in the hundreds of pages, there's no allegation of such recordings after the time that they were employed by Mr. Courser. That ended in July. The complaint was filed on August 6, 2018, more than 3 years thereafter. So you'd have a time barred problem in any event, Your Honor. We disagree with Mr. Courser's characterization of what's been found in the text messages, instant messages, other communications which were required to be produced in Mr. Courser's criminal case. There simply isn't time here for me today to get into all the ways in which we disagree about that, but none of this states a claim. What happened here was two employees who were reporting wrongdoing to House leadership, and they eventually got fired for it when it was discovered. That's what happened here. And the governmental immunity issue that Mr. Corser's, Mr. DiPerno spent some time discussing here this morning. Judge Quist also got that entirely right. None of the allegations would be sufficient to get around qualified immunity. So that's another problem. We have significant causation issues on most or all of these claims that are pled by Mr. Corser. Many of the things he complains about were as a result of the conduct he admitted at the House Select Committee under oath in sworn testimony. They weren't as a result of anything that was allegedly done by my clients, Mr. Allard or Mr. Graham. I'd also like to point out that with respect to many of these claims, one of the pleading problems is the fact that Mr. Corser refers to Mr. Klein, Mr. Allard, and Mr. Graham as a group, and there's no distinguishing the three of them. I don't represent Mr. Klein. He acted pro se, and it's impossible to tell which party he's talking about. There's a few of these claims where we have issues with the fact that there's no private right of action. But I would end with the fact that we have a number of these allegations made by Mr. Corser, which are refuted by his own sworn testimony at the House Select Committee. That testimony is fairly implicated by the pleadings here. It's referred to, that hearing is referred to, and so that testimony can be fairly considered by the court on a 12b6 motion. And that testimony refutes, undercuts the causation issues, provides statute of limitations support for the vast majority of these claims, and all of them have multiple reasons on which they were to be dismissed, and Judge Quist got it entirely right. Mr. Corser wants to continue retaliation by litigation as to everyone who was unfortunately involved in his tenure in the House of Representatives. But that's exactly why 12b6 exists. It's exactly why the Iqbal standard exists, to require some plausibility. With that, Your Honor, I've sufficiently addressed everything that Mr. DePoto had to say. Unless you have further questions, I'll cede the rest of my time.
Just one thing here. Are there allegations in here by Mr. Corser as to whether your clients were acting on behalf of the legislature or any governmental entity rather than as private individuals, and to in relation to his contention that his constitutional rights were being violated, due process and equal protection rights? And does that make any difference?
Your Honor, there are multiple allegations in that regard, and no, it does not make any difference. All of the allegations like that you're talking about consist mainly of my clients, Allard and Graham, spoke to members of House leadership, therefore they were in a conspiracy. There is no additional allegations which would support a conspiracy, which doesn't meet the Iqbal standard. By that standard, all of the six of us talking right now are in a conspiracy because we're speaking with one another. But of course, Iqbal requires that something be plausible, not just possible. My clients were employees of the House. They were to report to House leadership when they had concerns about their employment. That's what they did. And although this is a 12b6 motion, Mr. Corser has to plead something which is plausible, not just possible. There is no plausible allegation of a conspiracy here with House leadership, anyone in the House leadership with respect to what's claimed here. None of that gets him around any qualified immunity issues. None of it shows, sufficiently pleads a conspiracy. And this is merely the pleading of someone who got caught having an affair with a fellow legislator and is trying to distract from that story.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. DiPerno, any rebuttal? We can't hear you.
My apologies. There's plenty of allegations within the complaint that talk about how Allard and Graham were directed by House leadership to conduct this investigation and follow Todd Courser. In particular, there's allegations that talk about how they wanted to bring Todd Courser into compliance with the Republican caucus, and that they were doing that to dig up dirt on Todd Courser so that they could bring him into compliance. And they sent Allard and Graham out to do that dirty work, to follow Todd Courser, to find something, to dig up something that they can use.
Was this before or after Graham and Allard were fired?
Before. This started in January of 2015, as we allege in the complaint, when there was a problem initially where Todd Courser refused to sign the caucus pledge and where he refused to vote on the House road package. Those were problems that were created early on with the Republican caucus, and that's why there were comments made by the Speaker of the House and his chief of staff that they need to bring Courser in line and that they sent these guys out to dig up dirt.
So why were Allard and Graham fired then?
I think ultimately they were fired because the story came out that they were the ones behind the idea of tape recording and planting these devices to record conversations. And the decision was made that you probably shouldn't be doing that as an employee. You shouldn't be taping your boss. So they were fired for that reason. But that's after it came out that they were recording these conversations. So we don't know if that was in order to prevent the story from leaking out that they'd been instructed to do it or what, or what the proactive steps were as to why they were fired. But Ms. Howard made an interesting comment when she said that they were required to meet with House leadership when they had a problem with employees. That's not true. The House Business Office is the organization within the House of Representatives that is designed to deal with employment matters. If Allard and Graham had a problem with employment, they went to the House Business Office, which is human resources. They don't go to the Speaker of the House or his chief of staff. So it makes no sense, as we allege in the complaint, that Allard and Graham would be meeting with the Speaker of the House and his chief of staff on these issues. Just wouldn't have happened. So I think that's a fatal argument that they make.
You really think that if a staff member believes that two representatives are having an affair, that's just an HR thing they'd take to HR? They wouldn't take that to the Speaker? That seems to just defy common sense, frankly.
I don't think so. I think that would be the proper procedure. I mean, I don't know what's in their mind or why they did what they did. I'm just telling you what the proper procedure in the House of Representatives would be, and that would be go to the House Business Office, not to the Speaker of the House. They've never explained to us why they did that, because we don't have testimony from them on those issues. But as we allege in the complaint, that would be improper. And I think that supports our allegations under 12b-6, if you take those allegations in the light most favorable to the plaintiff, the claim should have been survived. And I want to touch on the issue of the time bar issue on some of these recordings. Number one, we don't know when all these recordings were made, but our complaint was August 6, 2018. 3 years before that would have been August 6, 2015. We don't know if recordings were made after that or before that.
You told us earlier that your proof, so to speak, or your allegation that these occurred is based upon your review of these various text messages. So what are the dates of the text messages? And obviously it had to have occurred prior to the text messages.
Or
simultaneously with the text messages.
Right, which occurred sometime, those occurred in May, June, July, 2015.
Isn't that outside the statute?
Those would be outside the statute, but for the argument we made, which I think is a good faith argument, that we didn't obtain that information We didn't get any of that, those text messages until May 1st of 2018. And so we believe that the statute of limitations would be delayed in those periods because all of that stuff was withheld for us. We fought like crazy to get that information in the criminal case. And we didn't get it until May 1, 2018. And we filed our complaint August 6, 2018. And we think that would toll the statute of limitations because of that.
So are you essentially conceding that but for a discovery rule that it's outside the statute of limitations?
I would have to say that would probably be my best guess based on the text messages and the timing of the text messages. I would have to say, yeah, probably they all occurred in April, May, June, July of 2015. And therefore, they'd be outside the three-year statute of limitations, but for our argument on tolling the statute of limitations.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. And I see that your time is up. So we thank you both for your argument, and the case will be submitted, and you may connect from the courtroom. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.